You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Enough, we have director Ursula Grace Williams coming through to talk about her work directing the new Marlon Williams documentary called Ngā Ao I Rua. Morena to you, Ursula. How are you doing?
Morena, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very glad to hear that. I'm good, a little bit nippy here. Dunedin is a little bit, it's May, the throes of autumn are coming into the cruel cold claws of winter, so it's getting a little bit cold. How are you? How are you where you are?
So I'm in Ōtautahi, Christchurch. It has been a bit raining and cold as well. However, I was in Lyttelton last night, where, of course, a lot of the documentary was captured, and that warmed me up, so to speak.
Oh, that's very sweet. I've heard lovely things about the kind of Lyttelton culture. You know, it's a little bit on the alternative side, maybe, compared to some of the other aspects of Christchurch. Would you agree with that?
100%. Yeah, it definitely is. And, you know, everybody knows everybody, and there's a true sense of community, and everybody looks out for one another. It's, it's a very, very special place.
One of a kind. That's awesome. Before we get talking about the movie, which I'm very eager to do, obviously, I want to know, what is your go-to cinema snack? As the person behind the camera, what do you eat when you're in front of the film in a cinema?
Okay, so annoyingly, I just don't like popcorn. I know that
really?
That's controversial. No, because, and it's the same with Hokey Pokey ice cream. Things get stuck. And anything that gets stuck in my teeth, I get kind of agitated, and therefore I can't kind of concentrate on the thing in front of me. So I definitely go for like an ice cream sweet snack, like maybe a Choc Top with nuts and berry. Ice cream.
I love a good Choc Top, man. I went and saw Sinners the other day and had a Gold Rush Choc Top, which was superb. It was lovely. But I understand the thing about the popcorn. They get a bit gross. Yeah, it's a bit, yeah. In your teeth. It's not a fun sensation. But I want to focus on the film now, I guess. In this film, Marlon says with every record, you hope you're rediscovering music again. Do you feel the same with filmmaking?
Oh, that's a good question. Of course, because, you know, as a documentarian, you're working into other people's lives and you're placing your attention solely on these participants and trying to understand how they see the world and how they see those around them and the context in which they live as kind of an outside observer. And so, you know, you have to redesign the wheel every single time. You know, you can't take the same formula for one participant and throw it onto another film. It just doesn't work like that. You have to listen to everything surrounding that human being or those human beings, and focus on that, I think.
Did you make that mistake of repeating the same blueprint for different subjects before? Have you learned that the hard way?
I think, you know, I've worked for companies like for Vice, for example, which have visual style guides, and you have to be confined to various different style guides within that. There isn't kind of, you're not allowed to do various different things. And so, yeah, I think, you know, in terms of form, I've definitely fallen into that. But then there's different approaches that you can take with human beings when it comes to interviews, when it comes to duty of care, when it comes to, treating various different participants in different ways according to who they are.
And Marlon is a participant who is very well media trained. I read that you said it took a little bit of time for him to let his guard down and for him to be the same off camera as on camera. When it comes to gaining a subject's trust, you know, how do you go about that? Do you go about that just by just being a fly on the wall? What's your strategy?
I mean, it's time, isn't it? It's the same with building any relationship. And so this one has been super interesting. It's the longest I've ever spent with a participant. And, you know, so inherently trust is built. And sometimes it's built the easy way and sometimes it's built the hard way. When I'm talking about the easy way, I'm talking about, you know, showing decency and respect and taking care and authenticity and showing up as my unapologetic self. And some of the hard ways, you know, like we were thrown into a relationship which was extremely exposing. Mm. And, you know, inherently there is power dynamics at play when you're editing and telling somebody's story and their life. So ensuring that that was a co-production with him and ensuring that, you know, he was okay with how his world was going to be portrayed, because, you know, it's not just now, is it? You know, something like this sits in a document that represents a time and space. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I don't know. I guess it's part of my role to ensure that responsible representation is taken into consideration in a meaningful way.
Yeah. That kind of reminds me of that that Beatles documentary in the 70s when they were making their last album, and it highlighted quite a lot of infighting in the band. And then Peter Jackson's series, I think last year or the year before, kind of a lot of archival footage from that same time, and it was actually full of just cheer and camaraderie. It wasn't all infighting, and it's interesting how that document can just kind of become a representation of a band or a person or whoever for X amount of time. You know, it is fascinating.
Yeah, it's really fascinating, isn't it? And that's a really good example of exactly what I'm talking about. You know, someone could have taken the footage that we have and turned it into something completely different.
Yeah.
But I guess the important thing is, you know, we showed it to the Ōtautahi community last night in Christchurch. And to me, that's the most critical one. You know, I wanted to know that, or the way that I could kind of measure that I had done my job is by them recognizing who they're seeing on screen, because, you know, those are the people that are truly in his world.
They're the village that raised him, you know. That's his people. How do you anticipate that this will change people's perceptions about Marlon? You know, what do you think people will come out of the film having a... What do you think their portrayal of him will be in their head?
I think the portrayal of him, I'm not sure that it'll change people's perspectives necessarily. It gives them a window into how Te Whare Te Wekaweka came about. I've had a lot of people say that they've fallen more in love with him after seeing this film.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he really did let his guard down, and he really did let us in, and for a long period of time. And, I mean, he's infectious. It's pretty hard not to be drawn to somebody like Marlon in all of his rambunctious and silly and intelligent and creative ways.
Mm-hmm. He's got, as the kids say, he's got Riz. Now, there's a really significant aspect to this film, not only just capturing his life, but capturing him going on a significant portion of his journey and reconnecting with his mother tongue and balancing the two worlds he was born into and that he lives in. And it must be so fascinating capturing that. You know, what was your biggest takeaway from watching someone at that point in that mission?
I think, you know, for him, it was a reconnection journey. He, you know, went to a kohanga reo, and his mum spoke Māori around the house, and Waiata was playing in the background. And whilst it wasn't fluent, the language wasn't fluent within him, the feeling of the music and everything else was. Mm. And so, yeah, I think it was just, it actually made me reflect a lot on the things that I'm missing from my Samoan side. And what I haven't, you know, had the opportunity to be exposed to in the same way.
Mm.
It's been a ride. It's been a long time, and it's been a ride. And, you know, just this morning, kind of an hour before we spoke, everything kind of hit me, you know, the Civic premiere,
mm.
the showing last night,
mm.
James Hay,
mm.
And it's so funny because, you know, people are going to show up and they're going to watch this 90-minute documentary that is an ode to this beautiful human being and his communities. Mm. And at the same point in time, there's all this unseen stuff that happens within that 5 years. You know, 5 years to get condensed down into 90 minutes.
Yep.
Is a feat, and there's and it means so much to me. It's going to be really hard leaving Christchurch tomorrow. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
I feel quite emotional about it because it feels like not an end to the, to this chapter, because, you know, I always feel like I'll be able to walk into Civil and Naval in Lyttelton and say hi to everybody, but at the same point in time, that consistency is lost.
Yeah. And being present in their reality, you know, that is, yeah, that's the unfortunate thing with distance, but life must go on, as people say. Time's arrow marches forward. Now, you know, Marlon, he's a product of a lot of things. He's a product of his community in Lyttelton. And he's also mentored by someone on here, Kwame. And he kind of plays the role of a Yoda kind of thing. Is that how you describe it? He is kind of like the Yoda to Marlon's Luke Skywalker?
I guess so. Yeah, they complement each other really well. I know that Marlon.
Yeah.
He chose well, you know. Marlon knew the strengths of Kwame. Mm-hmm. And played into those. And Kwame, they're just such a unique presence. You know, there's no, again, it's like an unapologetic presence. I know that he has lots of links down to Dunedin, and so I hope some of his whānau are very, very proud of him down there. I'm sure they are. He brought so much, not only to Te Whare Te Wekweka, he also brought so much to Ngā Awerua. Couldn't have done it without Kwame, obviously.
Absolute legend. I want to touch on the fact that you are leaving Christchurch, because I have relative cousin who lives in Wellington, and they work at a gallery, and they are an installer, so their job is to, you know, install the art and then deinstall it. And I once asked them if that took a bit of an emotional toll, and they said yes, but they're also happy because something else gets to come into play. How long does it take for you to get into that mindset of bouncing back and being like, oh well, there's a next thing that I can get really involved and fall in love with?
As a documentarian, you know, this is like something that I have to keep going with, and have done for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And as a result, projects are tinkering away before this one, you know, ended.
Yep.
And so I've been writing and researching and developing other ones for kind of 2 years now. One is in production, one is in advanced development, another one is getting applied to in the various funding rounds. So, you know, you can't take your finger off the pulse, because this is the moment, you know, that you have to kind of platform from if you want to continue to be a storyteller in this way. And I'm a mother of three, you know. There's a financial component to this. This is my job.
Yep.
And, you know, we have to keep surviving as a family. And so, you know, like any contractor or freelancer or anybody who's self-employed, you have to always be thinking about what's coming next, even though, you know, you're not necessarily done. But yeah, why I guess it was has been so emotional here in the last couple of last night is just, you know, seeing Kwame and I or and Emma, and seeing Mark and Marlon and my editor Josh just in the audience, and just knowing, like, yeah, knowing all those moments that weren't captured and that aren't within the frames of this documentary, and how to kind of part ways with it in a way, yeah.
It's like at the end of Lord of the Rings when they're leaving Middle Earth and they're going to the other continent.
Something like that.
Would you do another documentary in this style, and being in the trenches for 5 years and getting absorbed in someone else's life? Would you do that again? And if you could do it with anyone alive or dead, who would it be?
Oh man, that's a really hard question. Yes, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
I've signed up for this, and this is the type of work I want to do.
Yeah.
Because to know that you are responsibly representing a person or community, you have to spend time. You know, you can't go in and be extractive.
Yeah.
There has to be reciprocity and time for people to process what they're doing, and what they've said, and how that's going to sit, you know, in space and time. So 100%, like, I'm up for the long-term you know, feature length documentaries that take time, that I'm all about that. That is definitely something that I will do again, and intend to do with my next projects for sure.
Cool.
And the second part to your question was, who would I follow? I think, you know, metaphorically, you can ask yourself, who are the people that kind of need to have a light shone on them, whether that's issue-based or personality-based or subject-based. And I don't know if I can locate that as one human being. Mm. You know, like, if it was to be a rockumentary and, say, you were to say, you know, oh, I'd love to do something with, you know, Rihanna or whatever, or yeah, that's one thing. That wouldn't be my answer. It would be more about asking, and it's always been about asking what stories need to be told, and what characters need to be highlighted at this particular moment in time.
That's a very thoughtful answer. I appreciate that, and I appreciate you coming on this morning. And I can't wait to see the film. I'm very much looking forward to it. It's going to be a great time, I reckon.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I hope you enjoy it. And have a lovely rest of your morning.
Likewise. People, that was director Ursula Williams talking about the new documentary that she has just directed. It is called Marlon Williams Ngā Ao e Rua, Two Worlds, and it is showing at Rialto today, 3:30 p.m. to 5:45 p.m. respectively. Get your tickets now before they bloody sell out. We'll have some news and kai time very soon, but first, here is Marlon Williams with Whakamea Tia Mai from Te Whareti Wika Wika, his new album, which came out in April. You're listening to The One. Keep it locked.
Tai Rua Toru.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.